tell my inner child I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.
Hey, you guys, welcome to another episode of Talks with Two. It's Entute, the host, and today I have a very special guest, Mr. Ty Garth. How you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's very nice to have you on the platform.
I'm glad to be here. It's been a minute.
It has.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm excited to get into more detail about the things that you've been doing, because a couple years ago, I know some stuff, but you know, it's been a while, so I'm happy to catch up and see what all you got going on. So can you, you know, introduce yourself?
I'm Ty Garth, co-founder of the Ollie Life Youth Program. We've been in existence for 15 years now. Mm-hmm. I started it after I graduated from college. I went to Fisk University.
Fisk?
Yeah.
Okay. Fisk. So can you share a bit about your upbringing in Louisville?
I grew up in a single-parent home in Louisville, in an area in the West End called Village West.
Mm-hmm.
It was my granny's house. So, you know, in with granny, everybody lived with granny.
Yeah, everybody lived with granny.
So it was uncles, aunts, my siblings and stuff. But back then, like, I always shared, I never knew that we was poor. I never knew that it was the projects, because it was always fun for me. Like, and it was a family atmosphere on the block. So, you know, you have your fights, you have things that go on in the hood, but it wasn't really anything that I thought was bad, for sure.
Right. So how did your childhood experience shape your perspectives on mental health?
Well, I didn't realize that growing up in a single parent home and the struggles that was in my neighborhood, I didn't realize how much it affected me until I got older. I know in 2019, I had a bout with depression, anxiety, and everything. So I had to be admitted into the hospital because I attempted suicide by taking pills. But it wasn't anything that I was dealing with in that present moment. It was just all past traumas that I never dealt with.
So during this time of anxiety and depression, like, how did you cope with that at the time? Like, how old were you?
I'm 45. That was like 4 years ago.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was like 4 years ago.
So how did you cope with that? Like, did you get therapy? Like, what was the process in dealing with that?
After
the suicide attempt?
Yeah. Once I got out, I was in the hospital for 5 days. And during that time, I wrote my book, Ollieism. And, you know, they wouldn't give you pens or pencils, so I wrote it in crayon.
Wow, crayon? And so, all the 5 days that you were in there, you were writing?
Yeah, that's
crayon.
Because the first 2 days, that place, if you're not crazy, it's going to make you crazy.
Right.
Like,
did they put you on medication?
They was trying to. I wasn't taking anything. So, I know that, the second day, I had, a meltdown in the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had to restrain me and take me back to my room. But after that, I was like, man, I got to work the program to get out. Because if you don't, they're going to be in there longer.
So what were some of the traumas that you hadn't faced before the suicide attempt? Like, can you name some of those?
Dealing with, you know, the lack of a relationship that I had with my pops.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships with girlfriends and stuff like that. I was married, mm-hmm. so I was divorced.
Right.
And I had been divorced, you know, at that time, 12 years, and it's just like, man, I'm not over my ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm still hurting from losing my ex-wife, whatever. But it was just a combination of things. I even thought about, when I was 9 and I was molested by my uncle's girlfriend at the time.
Mm.
And it was like, still having that on my mind all of these years and actually asking my brother who was there, because, you know, he told me what happened was something that a woman is supposed to do to a man. So my thought growing up, just get women, treat them how, you know.
Right.
But that wasn't it.
So when that situation happened with the sexual assault, like, did you tell anyone, like, at the moment?
Nah,
it took a while.
So the funny thing is, my uncle, my favorite uncle, he passed on, rest in peace. But it was my uncle, his girlfriend, and my brother that knew. Like, I shared it after I got out the hospital going to therapy. And then I spoke to a group of students about mental health and everything like that. And I told myself, if I'm able to get through that,
right,
then I'm getting better. So during that time, I brought it up. And it was just, like, shocking.
Right.
But I was able to get through it. So I knew the healing process had begun.
So, and this was something that you came out about after the suicide attempt?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
That's when you did that therapy.
Yeah.
So just dealing with that, because, I mean, me, I've been through it. Same gender, female, and then I had a guest that went through it with a male. And then some people just think that it just can't happen like that. Like, with a female to a male, or with a male with a male, and a female on a female. Like, some people think that it can't happen like that. But honestly, I feel like a lot of people go through it in many different ways.
Yeah, for sure. When you say the word molestation, being molested, whatever, automatically they think it's the same gender. They don't think a woman would do that to a man.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens all the time. I'm sure the percentages is high.
Right.
So it was one of them things where for a long time, I just had that thought in my mind where my brother was saying, like, man, this is what women are supposed to do. That's why.
So he kind of brushed it off and
like
this is what's supposed to happen.
For sure.
So was that person of, like, same age as you or, like, older?
Nah, you talking about the
yeah,
lady?
Yeah, the lady.
She was grown. She was a grown woman. Yeah, like, I was nine. And I think she probably was in her mid to late 20s.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't.
Did you ever have to face that person again?
Nah.
Never seen him again?
Nah, it was just conversations with my uncle and my brother.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So.
So, did therapy end up helping you? Like, did you find a outlet with going to therapy?
It taught me to be open. Mm-hmm. And you know, show me that even with, like, the healing process, crying and journaling, having conversations, all of that is a part of that process of healing and getting over things. So I always been a writer. I was always someone who journaled and did things like that. But, nah, it definitely helped.
So at what point did you actually publish your book?
Well, that was and this is crazy, so that's my second book.
Oh.
My first book in 08, it was a book of poetry called Ghetto Poetry, Volume 1, and I did that. And those was poems that I have written in high school and college. And I just wanted to put it out. But while I was in there, you know, creating those daily affirmations for up to pour into other people and inspire other people, I needed them for myself. So I actually, part of my healing process was writing daily affirmations for myself as well.
And then it continued to help other people.
Other people, for sure.
Sometimes we go through stuff and, like, we use outlets to help us. And then once we do that and share it with the world, we find out that we impacting.
Facts.
A lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that's how I do with my music. At first it was for me, but then when I released my healing music, you have a lot of other people that went through the same thing and they feel it.
Yeah, for sure.
So, what did as far as fatherhood, you said your father wasn't there, and I know you're a father now. So let's talk about how does that impact the way that you are being a father now?
Well, I told my pops when my son was born and he finally had an opportunity to meet him, I was like, thank you for making me the best father, for showing me how to be the best father.
Right.
Excuse me, teaching me all of this stuff. And he was shocked. He's like, what you talking about? I said, because those birthdays you missed, mm-hmm. those holidays you missed, those basketball games, the pain I felt, my son would never have to feel that because I'm not missing anything.
Right.
And I'm going to be actively involved in his life. So.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's good. Sometimes, like, man, that stuff really do shape us.
Yeah, for sure.
So right, you pursuing a bachelor's?
I have my degree.
Oh, so you already have it?
Yeah. Okay. I graduated from Fisk in 2005.
So how did your time there influence your understanding of mental health, both personally and in relation to the students that you work with?
While I was in school?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hoop, so.
Oh, you use basketball, you play sports.
Yeah, so I was my outlet was basketball.
Right.
Any pain, any anger, anything I felt, I just go to the gym and hoop. So that was my whole outlet back then, playing basketball.
Playing basketball.
And I always tell people, you have to find some sort of outlet, though.
Yeah.
You're not going to share and be open or find somebody that you can trust or be in a safe space, go hoop, go do something that you enjoy.
Right. I feel like everyone has something that they love doing that they can confide in to, you know, be that outlet for them.
Yeah, for sure.
As a father, how do you approach conversations about mental health with your son?
That's funny because we're in the process of filming educational short films to, mm-hmm. you know, that teenagers are dealing with every day. So we create those. So doing that helps us when we need to have these conversations. Because we sit down and we create together, like, storylines.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, our first one we filmed about suicide awareness and prevention. So it was a conversation while we're creating, like, if you ever felt a certain type of way, would you, you know, be okay to come holler at me? You know, he was like, yeah. Or even if you couldn't talk to me, you can talk to somebody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I always try to make sure that he understands that. So it helps. Yeah.
It do, because I feel like some parents don't allow that space for their kids, because like me, not having that space for my parents, it kind of like shaped my mindset a little differently to where like I have to go to these other outlets, like the people that's outside of my parents. So I feel like that's an important thing, that your kid feels safe coming to you.
Yeah, for sure. And platforms like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being able to be on a platform where you can share, you know, and open and not be judged.
Mm-hmm.
It's a safe space, you know. A lot of times you got people, though, that want to come in and play victim.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you want to be the victim, but in reality it's like you're victimizing yourself because you're not truly being honest.
Right.
And trying to heal properly, you know. Life happens. Life gonna keep life regardless. But, you know, if you're not being honest with yourself and open with yourself, and you're always trying to play victim, you're gonna struggle.
Yeah. And I think we've all been there. Like, it take a lot to get to that point where you can be honest with yourself. And I don't even think most people realize that it all starts with self.
Yeah, for sure.
It all starts with self. So, what inspired you to establish Ollie Lifestyle?
So when I was in high school, my senior year, I had a free period, and I used to go help with the special needs students in in the school. Mm-hmm. So my degree is actually in special education. And that was my whole thing. I was gonna be a teacher, work with the special needs students and everything with disabilities and all of that. But then me and my co-founder, we was sitting around and I was like, man, I wanna do a skate team. Because I love skateboarding. When I was younger, it wasn't cool. You know what I'm saying? I had to, you know, hide that I had that passion and love for skateboarding. I'm not the greatest either, so I won't put that out there. But that's originally where, you know, the where it started. So I had a skate team here, and we used to go to Sixth Ave Skate Park. And I took some kids to California to compete in a competition out there called Skate Wars. And that's where the brainchild of Ollie started, because it was a skate team. Some of the kids was getting in trouble at school, so the parents was like, they can't come to practice today. Wow. You need to have conversations with them. So then me and my co-founder was like, we need to go back to the drawing board and figure out what it is that we want to do. We end up saying, we just going to be mentors. Because running the skate team is difficult.
Right.
Especially if you're a black-owned skate company, you know, other coaches don't want us to be successful.
Right.
So we went from that to we're going to create a curriculum, transition the youth from middle school to high school to college, college to life. And we turned the OLLI into an acronym, Only Living Life in Excellence.
Only Living Life in Excellence.
So then, that's what's it. We just start moving from there, getting contracts with the schools, juvenile, and just mentoring youth around the city.
So can you share some of the specific programs that you offer?
We have, I know everybody, you know, loves our suspension program, where if you have a child that is suspended at home, you don't want them to be at home all day, not doing anything. You can reach out and we can connect them with our sponsors. And most of them are business owners. And they can do service learning work throughout the day where they go, say, like, Faye Dot is one of our sponsors. They can go to the barbershop 4 or 5 hours, sweep up, clean up around there. It's because idle time. All they're going to do is get into something else.
Right.
And most kids want to be home anyway. But nah, you suspended, you're not just going to sit around, be on a video game, texting, doing whatever, running around the neighborhood with no parents around because they got to work.
Right.
Nah, we're going to put you to work too during that time. So we do stuff like that.
Yeah, I feel like that's very important, having something like that. I remember I was growing up, it was community center. We was always in summer camp. Like, we didn't have no time to do nothing. Like, we was just always in summer camp, had something to do. Because nowadays, how I see youth, a lot of them need help.
They need guidance, for sure.
Like, a lot of them need help. And I'm specifically talking about the violence part. Because now the youth is the ones that's mainly getting active.
Yeah. I tell them all the time, it's not us, meaning my generation. It's the babies.
Right.
Y'all killing each other. And that's because there's no leadership in the communities that they live in. Everybody, like your big homie can't be the same age as you.
Nah. And I feel like if they was real big homies, then they should be guiding the youth.
Yeah.
On not to follow their footsteps. You know, like not to make their same mistakes that they made.
So we do a... for the Fathers monthly men meeting. And it's just to get men in the community to step up and be impactful. So we meet once a month and we just pour into each other, and it's a safe space for them, because a lot of the men in the community that want to help, they still need healing too. They still dealing with past traumas. So we just make it a safe space for them. We meet at High Road Academy the last Saturday of each month.
Right.
And just, we just fellowship with each other, and we rebuilding that strong bond with these men that can go back into the community and be effective and be impactful to the youth.
So are there, like, can you share, like, a success story from, you know, just those programs that you put out there?
Well, it's a lot, actually. I can just start in my house. My son was the first Ollie kid. Ooh. And I think about CJ, who's started a film production company called Rich Films. He films all of our videos and edit and do all of that. You know, he's 16. Wow. He started this in seventh grade. Wow. So he's been doing film and production since seventh grade. My son's an actor. He plays ball, but they partner with each other to do these short films and create content with each other. So, like I said, like that right there is just based off of what you're seeing every day. You know, I'm a single father, so my son, you know, it's just, you know, him, me and him in the house. So he's seeing, he's at every event, every back to school, every turkey drive, every breast cancer awareness, everything that I do and I have done, he's been there, you know. So, like I said, he was the first Ollie, actual Ollie kid.
And how has it been being a single father? Because once again, we always hear about the single mothers. They really don't shed light too much on, you know, single fathers or what men go through, period.
I mean, as far as fatherhood, it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, me and my son, but personally, like, as far as having a companion or somebody, you know, I have my moments, but I'm just not going to settle because I know my worth. Mm. And I know what I'm able to bring in a relationship, even though I've struggled with so many. I tell people that I'm the greatest relationship advice giver ever, and it's because I fail so many. And it had nothing to do with the other person. It's all about me, learning me, being a better me. So once I realized, you know, how to be honest with myself about the mistakes that I made in relationships, then I realized, like, yeah, I'm the greatest advice giver for relationships.
Right. I mean, once again, like, it all starts with self, man, like, and just being aware and just taking accountability.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a huge part. It's a huge part of the healing. So what or who has been a significant support system, you know, for you?
My mother, you know, my sister, my family in general, my son. He's my biggest motivation and inspiration, my son, because I know I have to be great for him. Right. In order for him to be excellent, I have to be great.
And I'm sure he's taken a lot learning from you.
For sure. For sure. For sure. So, yes, that's my biggest inspiration. My son, my mother, my sister, my family.
So other than the suicide attempt that we spoke about, what other challenges have you faced personally related to mental health throughout your journey?
Just being a single father, you know, not having a second person, you know, because you have to do everything. Now, my son's mother, he loves his mother. She's involved and everything like that, but we're just not in a relationship anymore, you know, but there's things that my son and I go through.
Right.
You know, you have the, he's 17. So those growing pains when he's light skinned, he thinks he's fine and stuff, girls telling him he's cute. So right. He starts feeling himself. Those are father and son struggles. Mm-hmm. I got to figure out, like, so he plays ball too. And when he have a bad game or they lose, I got to be dad in the car, dad at home, dad in the gym. So I got to make sure that I'm saying the right things, I'm doing the right things, because kids hold on to stuff. They don't know how to, I mean, even though I tell them, you need to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Always have a voice. Sometimes kids don't understand what that means. and they internalize everything. So if I say something that could affect him at 17, that I say something to him at 17, it may affect him at 21.
Right.
You know, yes. So I got to be mindful. And that's a struggle in itself, because then it's like, do I say this or don't I don't say this? But if I don't say this and he experienced something that I could have said and shared to him to help him through a situation, you know, you battle with yourself as a father.
That is a battle. That is a battle. So in the program, is there a certain age group?
It's middle school, so 12 to 18.
12 to 18.
Yeah.
And is it female and male, or no, is it just male?
It's just male. Shout out to my sis, Kara. She has the fine design. So,
you know that's us, home team.
Yeah. So when I first started initially, after the skateboard stuff, we did have young ladies, but I connected all the little girls that was in my program in the beginning with Kara.
Right.
We met and we was locked in forever. So she, if I have a young boy who has a sister and she needs some mentoring, I just send them to Kara and the fine design.
And she speaks highly of you in the program, because I told her I was getting you on here. And she was like, yes. She was like, yes.
Yeah, that sis.
So in the program, what are some things that you see in the kids, in these young men? The struggles.
Just not having that male presence. And, you know, a lot of them's being raised by granny, because mom's is still trying to do her thing, or she's working. So if she's working to provide two jobs, she's not in the home. So, and there's not a male presence for these young men. So they out doing their thing too. And it, the biggest thing, let me go back. The biggest thing is the lack of education. They're not taking school seriously. You know, everybody don't have to go to college, but at least finish high school, complete high school, pick up a trade, do something. But they not taking school seriously either. So that's very impactful in our community, the lack of education.
So, are you in like high schools? So are you in the schools, or is it like an after school program, or how do you recruit?
So, because I've been doing it so long, I have built relationships with so many different schools within Nashville and the Middle Tennessee area. I'm currently housed at High Road Academy, which is a alternative school, but I have relationships and contracts with middle schools around the city, high schools around the city.
So what do you do in the do you do anything in the juvenile system?
Recently we haven't, but in the previous years, we would go down once or twice a week and speak to the juvenile and do our curriculum with them. But sometimes we partner with my homeboy, Daniel. He's my little bro, Daniel Westbrook. He's down there a lot. And he'll reach out, be like, bro, can you come through, you know, share some, you know, light on life situations for these young men. And I go down there with him sometimes, my co-founder as well. Daniel just recently spoke at my school that I'm at.
Oh, for real? Yeah. Daniel, he's such a light. I had him on here. He was my first episode.
Yeah, Daniel, that's my brother.
So, I definitely rock with him. What are some things in the curriculum that you feel like benefits the most?
All of it. All of it. Like everything from the financial literacy to
sex. Need to know that.
Yeah, sex education to purpose. Like actually this week, the topic is purpose and staying true to yourself.
That's the big one.
What I'm saying? Then you got what we talk about, like the whole social media. We had a whole week doing the curriculum where we watched films and created. I told them to be the CEOs of the social media outlets, but make it kid friendly. So they create. I had them create the new Twitter, the new Instagram, the new Facebook, but make it kid friendly and safe.
Right.
And shockingly, the kids were so on board with that. But I'm so after they did that and made all of these kid-friendly apps, mm-hmm. I said, so are y'all going to go delete y'all social medias now? Because y'all recognize that it's dangerous. Mm. But since these social media platforms don't have all of this kid-friendly stuff that y'all want, are y'all going to go delete it? Of course they're not.
Right.
But it was the fact that they was able to come up and be creative like that. So.
Yeah, because social media is, man.
It's dangerous.
Social media is dangerous. It'll have you feeling like you have to be this. Like, everything on here is like a portrayed, like it's perception.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's just like, it make kids think that they had to live beyond their means.
Yeah, for sure. And perception is one of the topics as well that we go in our mm-hmm. curriculum. So you break it down like how you perceived as a person, you know, your first interaction with somebody is very important mm-hmm. because that's a lasting memory. So you want to make sure that you leave your mark in the most positive way so that somebody, regardless of what you go through after or what they hear after, mm-hmm. they're basing it off that person they met.
Right.
You know, so.
So as a father, educator, and community leader, how do you manage the stresses that come with these roles while prioritizing your own mental health?
All right. Ali is in part two is on the way.
Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, it's five of them done already. So.
Oh. So you did like a series?
Yeah, so that's part one. Ali-ism, that's the first one. That's part one. Part two, three, four, and five is already done. I just got to put them out.
Wow.
So I just journal a lot. And like I said, now doing this content stuff with my son, these short films, mm-hmm. that keeps me going and keeps my mind from wandering off.
So looking ahead, what are your hopes for the future for the Ali brand and its impact on mental health in the community?
To branch out across the country, the world, actually, for sure, because what we do at Ali is it's inspiring, and not just for the youth, but for men. For women as well, mm-hmm. you know, everybody can take something from what we're doing. It's our curriculum, it's a transition curriculum. Middle school age is the most impressionable age. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's our focus, because we want to catch you before you get to all the influences and everything that can keep you from staying on the right path. So I just hope to be in as many schools as possible, make as many connections and network with like-minded people. Because it's about the people.
Right.
So, and it's about our culture, pushing it forward. And that's it. That's the whole focus.
So, you have a clothing brand. So, Ali is a clothing brand.
So, no, Ali is not a clothing brand. And I say that only because sometimes people, like I took my online store down mm-hmm. because they was just going straight to the store and focus on purchasing the mm-hmm. gear. And I didn't want people to think that I was a clothing brand, because I'm not.
Right.
I'm a mentor. I'm not a fashion designer.
Right.
Ali is a youth mentoring program. Shout out to Lewis Powell. He was one of the first group of Ali kids. He created the logo. Mm-hmm. It didn't look like this at first, you know. Of course, he couldn't. He wasn't an artist, but he was like, we just need shirts to wear when we go on these trips and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I thought it was a great idea. So it went from that to, man, we going to come up with different ideas. If I'm going to rock my brand, any brand is going to be my own.
Right, as you should.
You know, so I'm like, all right, I'm creating all these ideas now based off of one logo. You got the acronym for Only Living Life and Excellence. And I'm just going to flip it, and I'm going to rock my own brand. So we just started making shirts, and then people was like, hey, man, I want to buy that. Can I get that? All right, let's sell it to you, whatever, or give them away. I gave away more shirts than I've sold, probably.
Right.
But I had to take the store down, like I said, because people wasn't focused on what I wanted them to focus on. And that's the curriculum, the program, and what we do for the community. You know, I just didn't want you to purchase the shirt and not know what you're rocking.
Right. So do you, in your curriculum, is it entrepreneurship as well?
Everything.
I would like to see this. I'm interested.
Yeah, we hit on everything. Like, for sure. I definitely can have you come to the school and speak to the kids.
I would definitely be. That's what I've been doing lately, man. I done hit John Early, Jerry Baxter. Like, it's, I love it.
Yeah.
I love telling my testimony and my story because I got one.
And those are two schools that partnered with me.
Oh. Oh. Yeah. You're already in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Already familiar with the kids.
Yeah. Miss BJ over at Jerry Baxter. Miss Keisha. You know, they all fist guys. They went to, I didn't go, we went to, me and BJ went to school, the counselor. Mm-hmm. We was in school together. Miss Keisha was older. John Early, Dr. Riggs, and everybody over there. Yeah.
Yes. Like, I love those schools, man. John Early. I got my case up.
I saw that.
Got my case up.
I saw that. I saw that. Yeah.
So that's definitely nice. I would definitely love.
Did you go to John Early?
Mm-mm. I went to Two Rivers.
Oh, okay.
And it's crazy because you would think that I would, you know, hit my community and stuff, but you know, it's, they not really too big on, you know, what I'm doing because I got shot last year.
Yeah.
In both of my legs, so. You know, just making music and testimony and stuff, man. You would think that I can go down the sidewalk and hit Napier Elementary, where I grew up at, Napier Elementary in Two Rivers. But just being blessed that John Early gave me the opportunity to do that. So now we have, like, an actual relationship. And I was just there supporting the local hip-hop and rap artists like Quani Cash, Young Buck, 2 Live Bree. I was just there during the African Museum that they was having.
Yeah.
And the kids had already knew me.
Yeah.
Like, they had already listened to my music. And now at this point, the principal want to know who I am. So she started doing research, invited me back, gave me my own classroom to share my testimony. Jerry Baxter was actually there on a field trip to John Early for the museum.
For the museum.
So they rotated out. And came and see me. I spoke to like 400 kids in 3 days.
Nah, that's dope.
Like, it was crazy. And she was like, how would you like to have, like, your own exhibit, you know, forever, as long as it can be up, so they see it when they leave school.
So who was that, Miss Edmondson?
Miss E. Yep.
Miss E.
Yep. Miss E. She's great.
She's an angel.
She is, and she believe in me.
Shout out to Miss E. Much. She donates to Ollie often.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shout out to her. I love her, man.
I'm gonna be in there soon, like as permanent, working with my own group of kids.
No, that's dope.
So yeah, man. Hopefully, like, we can collab.
Yeah, for sure.
Bring you up there.
They love me, at John. They
love me everywhere.
They love me everywhere. I'm loved everywhere for sure.
So, what advice would you give to young people who may be struggling with their mental health and, you know, scared to reach out for support?
Pray at first. Go to God with everything. You know, that was the first thing I did. I should have started off with that.
Right.
But just praying heavy to whoever you believe in, whoever you're going to pray to. But just pray and, you know, and ask God for guidance. And that's the first step. And that gives you the strength to then be able to find somebody that you trust and have a conversation with, and find that safe space. So that's the first advice. Like, pray it away until you get the strength to, you know, like I said, find somebody.
And so your company is nonprofit, right?
Yes.
So what were some challenges that you had came across, you know, while building this nonprofit?
Well, luckily I had great people around me, and I still do. Shout out to Dr. O, James Bush, Dredd, and Belinda Gale Management, and Kara. Kara was the first nonprofit organization that Ollie was under, and we shared that nonprofit status together. She continued to pour into me and believe in what we had going on. So when I was deciding to branch off and just focus on Ollie as far as, like, the nonprofit thing, because I don't want anybody to control me.
Right.
And when you get these grants, they're controlling you. They tell you how to spend your money, where to spend your money, and if you don't, it's like you gotta give it back. I just wasn't on that. So my big things was finding sponsors and people who believed in the brand.
Right.
And what I had going on it. And I have sponsors that's been with me for 10 years now that support and spend money on Ollie because they believe in the movement.
Right.
Not me. They believe in Ollie and what's out there. So, but again, the nonprofit world is like, that's worse than being in a gang sometimes and dealing with street stuff because they make it hard. They give you the money, and then they going to make it hard on you. Like, I just don't want them to have that over me.
Right.
And then if they don't like what you're doing with the money, they can get you removed from something that you started and you created because you have a board. And they get into the ear of the board members and have them turning. But luckily, all my board members are people that I trust.
Like, now,
I
love. Solid. How many board members do you have currently?
Six. And they all tatted on me, so I know they ain't going to do me wrong. They can't fire me from
right
the brand that they know that this is my baby right here. So they trust me. But they're nonprofit work. Even not just getting money and getting grants and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Other community advocates and youth advocates,
mm-hmm.
It's like it's not competition. We all got the same common goal. I don't need to try to outdo you as a nonprofit.
So do you feel like that's what's out there, competition?
For sure. Community work, it's like being in a game. It's like being in a game. My organization versus your organization. We gonna compete for who can, you know, help the most children. You can't come over here and help these kids because I'm over here. Why can't we? The more the merrier, right?
Right.
So if I give 100 turkeys and you give 100 turkeys, they got 200 turkeys over there.
Right, but you wanted to just be 100.
You know, so that's why I just look at it like, let me just stay in my lane and do what I do. Like, I joked and I laughed, but I'm really loved. Ollie has been in every area of Nashville.
Man, and they got to feel good.
Every area. Like, I'm good at ignoring stuff. So right. I'm not concerned about, okay, this is where you work out of, that's fine. You can have 100 people over there. I just need one.
That's a perfect mindset. That's a perfect mindset. So how long has Ollie been around again?
Since 2010.
Dang.
Yeah, since 2010.
Wow, half of my life.
Yeah, since 2010. We've been out and... you know, and like I said, you know, I'm not originally from Nashville, but I love it here. But this is home. So to give back, well, anywhere black for me is home.
Right.
We black. We can go anywhere. We the most influential culture. Everybody want to be us.
Facts.
So
fact. So how important? And I think you kind of touched on it, but how important is it to have that team, you know, that board that's just so strong and holding everything together? Because me as a board member, this is like my first year being a member of the board, and I'm just realizing, like, dang, it really take your village to do this.
No, it does. It does. It really does. Like, my co-founder, Dred, shout out to Dred Yehuda. He's from New Jersey. We met in college.
Is that the guy that I seen a long time ago?
Yeah,
man, shout out to him.
I met him when he was 18, you know. Solid as they come, that's my little brother. Like I said, James Bush, we all went to Fisk together. He was at Fisk as well. Dr. O and Belinda Gale Management. And Kara, my mom, my sister, like these people, like, they understand that I'm going to make sacrifices
right.
for the brand, and I'm going to make everything that I'm doing is not even for me anymore. it's for them, it's for my son, it's for generations after, because I'm reaping the benefit mm-hmm. right now by being able to pour into other people and being a blessing to them, you know. So when Ollie becomes that Fortune 500 company, mm-hmm. that's for my son. That's for his children's children. I'm putting in the work right now.
Generational.
So, like, you have to have solid people around you in order, with me having that mindset. Mm. It's not about the right now. It's about the future.
So right.
My people understands that, and that's why they support me.
So, what are some sacrifices that you had to make?
Financially, everything.
Everything.
Sleep, financially, it's like everything. I pour into so many people, and so many people, you know, believe in me and have faith in me. So right. I'm sacrificing me, personal time, quality time for myself. Sometimes even self-care, which is not good.
Right.
But sometimes it happens like that.
Mm.
But again, when you, I'm like the golden child. You see, remember that movie Golden Child with mm-hmm. Eddie Murphy? I'm that golden child everybody's looking for. Like, my family, they all depend on me. I'm like, I'm that shining light.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I can't let them down.
Not at all. So, what would be your advice to anyone who wants to start a nonprofit and do youth work?
Get an LLC, be for profit, and just give back.
So, what's the difference between nonprofit and for profit?
Like, so, Ollie Life Youth Program is a nonprofit. Ollie Lifestyle is a for profit company because I do sell apparel. I do sell my books.
Oh, okay.
So, if you want to give back to the community, if you want to be a pillar in your community and give back, just create your business that generates you money, and then just find some organization or just give back.
Right.
You don't have to go get a nonprofit status to give back. Because think about this. What are you giving back for? What you want in return when you help in the community?
You shouldn't want nothing.
Exactly. So why I got to go be a nonprofit organization to give back to a community that I ain't expecting anything back from anyway? So why would I go borrow money from you to go do something that I would do anyway? Because they're not going. I don't expect anything back from them. I can't go deliver 100 turkeys and then expect that family to make me a plate.
Ooh, that was a word.
So
that was a word.
You don't have to be a nonprofit to give back to the community.
Right. And I know a lot of people get in for the wrong reasons.
Facts.
Thinking that it's easy to get them things.
It's a status symbol. It's a status symbol. It looks good on social media. It makes, like you said, it makes you feel like you're portraying something that you're really not.
Mm. Yeah. That's crazy.
If we take a picture right now mm-hmm. and we pull out money and we post it, people think we got a lot of money.
And here they come. Here they come. They aiming at us the whole time.
So if you a nonprofit leader of an organization, you want people to see you in a certain light that you're really not. Because the genuine people don't always know what they're doing.
Right.
Like I said, you can have 100 people in that section. Just give me one. I'm okay. That's how it be.
People got to learn how to be okay. That's okay. Not greedy, just enough. So as we wrap up, where can we find you? On social media?
Ollie Lifestyle, everything. Everything's Ollie Lifestyle. Because it's not just a brand, it's a lifestyle. So Ollie Lifestyle, everything on all platforms. And at my website, OllieLifeYouthProgram.org.
Okay. And I'm going to make sure I tag everything in the description when this interview drops So y'all heard it here, folks. Another episode of Talks with Two, and thank you for coming to sit down.
Thank you for having me. This is dope. You're doing some dope stuff for sure.
Thank you. Is there any advice you can give me?
Keep going.
Before we go,
keep going. Don't stop. Don't stop. No matter what trials or tribulations you may face, keep going, because what you're doing, you might feel like it's not reaching the masses. It don't matter right now. If it's reaching those people that needs to hear it, then that's all that matters. That's the blessing in itself. You know what I'm saying? Because look what you've done in a short time, and look, schools is already.
Right.
So, just keep going. Keep pushing.
I definitely needed to hear that. I started this in August. It was August, and it was just thought, just off of my music. A lot of people, I went through sexual assault too, but you had the courage to speak about it in a song, and I was just doing it for my healing. So I'm like, what can I do? If people are already in my DMs feeling safe and wanting to talk to me, what can I do to, what platform can I bring? Because I wear many hats, being a music producer, an engineer, an artist, throwing events. I do so much, but it's like, what can I do to give back? And then I'm already a board member of the Fine Design as well. So it's like, man, I need to use my platform and my voice for something, because I do have one. And basically my overall goal for the podcast is to bring, resources for you, people like you, to come share your story, and for people like me who need people like you.
Yeah, for sure. That's during the during COVID, mm-hmm. right? I started the Soul Project Show, where I go live on Instagram mm-hmm. and just talk to people. And the Soul Project Show was the icebreaker that we use with the kids before we start programming. So it's sharing our life experiences, Soul Project Show.
Yeah.
Walk us through in your shoes for that brief moment and get us to know who you are before we start. And we took that to, we're on season 6. We haven't dropped season 6 yet, but we're working on season 6, and we're changing up the format. That's what has been taking so long. So Soul Project Show is coming. Just be patient. We're doing that.
Be patient. Stay tuned.
June the 7th is our third annual For the Fathers event that we do, and we celebrate men and young men in the community that's mm-hmm. doing positive things. So this is our third year for it, and that's in partnership with Let's Have Manifestation with James Bush and Dr. O and Belinda Gale Management. So.
Okay. So he got a lot of things coming up, you guys. Make sure you tap in, tune in, subscribe to our YouTube Talks with Two, and tap in with us on all streaming platforms as well. Until next time, we out.
Tell my inner child I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.